Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, yelling, give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we do interviews, and it is that time of year when you hang out with your writer friends, and they got both the phones on the table, boy. They got the bat phone out, and they got the other phone. I ain't even got the number to the bat phone.
I don't even got the number to the bat phone.
It's your bat phone. It's sitting right there.
The only way I know it is if I actually text myself.
Yes, I see what you're saying. You got the number. You just don't know what it is.
No, I have no idea what it is.
This is my man, Vinny Goodwill of Yahoo Sports, joining us here, rocking his Bad Boy Pistons t-shirt like he wasn't born in 1984.
That's right. Get the year right.
Like, who am I to judge on that, by the way?
Like, seriously.
I'm the most in the time machine being in the world. Who am I to judge for that?
Hey, look, man. That was like the golden age of fandom for me. Because there was no journalism attached to it. I could just be a fan.
Well, the thing to me, when I talk to people that I know who are from Detroit, the way they talk about the Bad Boys Pistons is completely different than the way that people talk about any other team that recent, because they talk about them like they just dudes in the neighborhood.
That's what they were.
Yeah.
Like, there was a certain level of closeness. Like, my dad is a tailor, so he used to have John Sally and Dennis Rodman. All those guys were like regular people to me. And then
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew he was a tailor, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he would come home and tell me all these different stories about these dudes. Like, they were regular dudes. They just happened to play basketball. And then these dudes were also dudes who lived close enough to the city that they could hang out in the city.
Yes.
And there was like no social media. There was no separation that you had to not be with the people. Now,
right.
Athletes can't hang out.
Yeah, also
you got to be careful about that.
Also, Detroit is one of those places where there aren't separations. Like, everybody, yes, like, at least with black folks, right? Everybody kind of hangs out in the same place.
The separation ain't between athlete and common folk.
Yeah,
if there is a separation, it ain't there.
Yeah, it ain't. But it ain't. Look, it ain't between athlete and common folk. It, like, the money separation is, it's just ain't a whole lot. Anybody can be there.
Common.
In the spot.
We just there.
In the spot.
And nobody treats people like they were completely different. Yeah. Like, my aunts tell stories about seeing Rick Mahorn hanging out in the clubs and Rick Mahorn being like the nicest human being ever.
Yeah.
Until Rick Mahorn like slaps me upside the head and lets me know that he's not going to ever be nice to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I should have tried that when I met you. here's a hypothesis also for you about the Bad Boys.
Uh-oh.
I'm not saying, I want to try to use my words right because I don't want people to misunderstand because you know how it goes, but it's my own podcast. I think I'll be able to spell this out. There is no such thing as, like, one way to be black or the right way to be black, and one person is not necessarily blacker than the other. Can we put that out there in the beginning?
Agreed.
But I could make an argument that the Bad Boys are, like, the blackest team in the history of the NBA, and here's why I say that.
Okay.
It is, like it's a black experience kind of black, up and down the roster, including, and very important here, including this rich white man that you just got to put up with, even though you really don't like him, but you still got to do it, which is Bill Laimbeer, right?
Close to Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah, underrated Bill Laimbeer.
Underrated. You see, you got country guy Joe Dumars.
Right. It's every kind of black dude out there, right?
New York guy John Sally.
Yes.
Chicago guy. Wait, West Side of Chicago guy. Let me make that clear. Isaiah Thomas.
But the one who went to private school. Which is another, we all know that guy.
Absolutely.
Also, right?
Absolutely.
Dennis Rodman, this is before Dennis Rodman had lost his mind, right? You got him. What's Pop's name? James Edwards.
Yes, yes, from Seattle.
Well, what was y'all's name for him?
Buddha.
Buddha, that was
because of the mustache.
Yeah, that was right.
Looked like the Buddha man.
That was right. Everybody on that team seemingly has some like very, very
blackety black
nickname, right?
Like Vinny the Microwave Johnson.
The Microwave is the greatest nickname in the history of basketball.
For more reasons than one.
Yes, yes, yes. But it's also perfect because the Microwave had just come out.
Yes.
Like, you probably like me. You don't remember a world without a microwave.
Absolutely not.
I remember when we got the microwave, but I don't remember before the microwave. So one year at Christmas, the microwave had gone out. And so it's the day after Christmas, and you know, mama ain't cooking. We trying to heat up these leftovers. And I remember I sat up and looked at them and was like, so what am I supposed to do? I had no idea how you were supposed to like use the pots and all this. Like, that's what y'all was doing? Y'all must have really wanted those leftovers back in the day.
I'm trying to, what year did the microwave actually come out?
I think we got the microwave in like 85.
Wow.
I think.
So that would have made you, what, 4 or 5 years old?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
okay,
like,
I get it.
I clearly remember when they got the microwave. I have no recollection of food being reheated without pressing buttons.
I don't either.
Right. Let me tell you, if your microwave went out and you had to reheat some food,
you would
really be sitting there just like, damn, what am I supposed to do?
Right? The oven?
Yeah. Well, that's an option also. I learned all these things in the process.
I had no idea. You just made me think about, had no idea the microwave was that like close to my age.
Yo, that's what I'm saying. That's why that nickname is so cold, because the microwave had just come out. They're like, yo, he like a microwave.
You know what I feel like? I feel like one of those people now who makes fun of these draftees.
Yes.
Who have no idea what a VCR is.
Yeah.
Who have no idea what the phone is where you have to, you know, push the number and go all the way back and all that. Like, I feel like one of those people.
Oh, no, it's coming though. Like, I'm at that point now where I can do that. I can give you like an old man story. Like, my dad was explaining to me one day, like, the origins of the phrase, the ice box. Like, I didn't realize that there was an actual ice box, that the Iceman, and what he said, I didn't notice, right?
What, actual ice box?
So what happened was, before, like, people had freezers, the Iceman would go around every day selling ice. Like, that was one of the gigs my dad had. He used to sell ice when he was little. So the Iceman rolled around selling ice. You'd get your ice, and then you'd put the ice in the ice box. I always thought icebox was just like a slang for the freezer.
I just thought it was like a country thing or something.
Yeah, yeah. No, there used to be, that's how you would get, that's how you would do it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, who knew?
This is an education.
That's it, who knew? And all because of Bad Boy Pistons. So you had your man Boo, you had Spider.
Yes.
You had Spider, Sally, Rick Mahorn, which I believe the nickname I've heard for him was Big Booty.
Well, I don't know if they called him that. I know when he was in D.C., they called him McFilthy or McNasty or something like that, and all that just came over because of how tough he played.
I once saw somebody refer to him on Twitter as Rick Big Booty Mahorn.
Wow.
Right.
I would never do that.
I would not either. That would not be my vote, but that's the Bad Boy Pistons.
They all have nicknames. And I said we.
Oh, yeah, Zeke. Right, we go with the nigga. Zeke, Joe D.
Everybody has one.
Except for Bill Laimbeer.
He's just a jerk.
Well, yeah, I believe his nickname, you know, watch out for this when we, you know, post this game. His nickname got to be that, right?
Yes, 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 yes.
Which, for what it's worth, used to be your nickname.
That's true.
You were that over there.
That is true. Thanks, Rip. Appreciate that.
You kind of shook up the world this week, man.
Did I?
You put out a story about the Rockets.
You know what happened? I put out a story and I got on the plane. So I had no idea the world was burning.
Well, that's actually funny, because you had sent me a text that said, yo, it's bad in Houston. But I didn't know there was a story, right?
Yeah.
And so then I find there's a story. Then I try to send you a text and I get back to Green Bubble. All right. So that's always funny when that happens.
It just so happened. I wasn't planning on writing a story that day. I was just making a couple of calls, just checking around, draft stuff. And then someone says, hey, let me tell you about the mess that's going on in here. I'm like, where? He told me. I made a few calls to verify. They're like, wait, it's worse. Like the certain, like you said yesterday, you know, sometimes you only let off a little bit of what you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse.
Oh, it's bad.
It is terrible. Like the Chris Paul stuff is going to get all the attention, but that's just a morsel of the bigger problem over there. So I had no idea it was going to elevate to the levels that it elevated. Oh, if I'm Chris Paul, I would ask for a trade too. Who wants to play that way? Like, who wants to be that dude standing in the corner? I'm Chris Paul. I am a Hall of Famer. I am used to handling the ball, orchestrating all this other type of stuff. Why do I got to stand in the corner? If I'm James Harden, I'm like, you know, you can get out of here too. That's cool. Like, it just doesn't mix, and I don't blame either guy for it. You know, I can see both sides of the story, but yeah, it's Twitter kind of blew up.
Well, I want to get to that part, but I want to ask you about this and tell you, you know, because I made a couple of calls myself.
Of course.
Right. Talked to a couple people. And one thing that I'm finding interesting in the response to this is how little respect people are showing for Chris Paul and, like, as a veteran and professional. Because the thing about Chris Paul is people don't like playing with him. People find him to be overbearing, you know, all of those things. Right. He's not the most likable dude in the world. But I've never heard anybody say, like, Chris Paul didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, right. Chris Paul was not a guy who like, he knows. He has not won a championship, But as a player, his teams have overwhelmingly been successful, right? And he showed up in New Orleans. That 2008 New Orleans team, for example, this dude is 23 years old, absolutely out front, and put together, cobbled together that team and got them to the second round of the playoffs, second best record in the league, all of that stuff, right?
Right.
So you can say he hasn't won, but you can't say that this dude like doesn't know anything about what a team should be like.
Sometimes a guy is too smart for his own good.
Yes.
I feel like Chris Paul, Aaron Rodgers, you can almost put them in the same category. Like, they have all the tools, right?
Yes.
And then sometimes they can just be a little bit tougher to work with. Now, Aaron Rodgers got the jewelry. So he right. can, so he can do that type of thing, and guys sort of have to go with that.
Right.
Chris Paul doesn't. And when you're 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
People just aren't going to be in the mood to take your guff.
No, you're right. But here's the thing though. I think, and from what I've gleaned from the people I've talked to, is that he got to Houston, looked around, and was like, hey, man, this isn't the way a team is supposed to be, right? Like, this is not how an operation is supposed to be run. This is like, this ain't right.
Because for
7 years, but when he got there, for 5 years, this whole thing had been built around James Harden. And then Chris Paul gets in here and is like, I don't think that this is like, this ain't the right environment, right? Mm-hmm. I think Chris Paul knows some things about that. Like, say what you want, but he played these years for Doc Rivers. He may have had trouble getting along with him, but he did know how things are supposed to be done. And he got to Houston and was like, yo, this is not how things are supposed to be done. And I got to go stand over here in the corner.
Right.
So Chris Paul is like, hey, guys, why don't we run an offense? I have never heard a player get criticized for saying we should probably run an offense.
And here's the other part of it. As much as guys don't like playing with Chris Paul, they don't mind him saying the things that he's saying because they believe it too. They just don't have the cachet to go out and actually say it. They don't have the stripes to say it. And like I said, like, remember how I called Magic Johnson the imperfect messenger?
Right.
For the mess in LA? Like, you may not have liked how Magic Johnson kicked it. You may not have liked how Magic Johnson left. But Magic Johnson was right on a number of different things,
yes,
as we've seen
yeah.
over the past couple of days.
Yeah.
I think Chris Paul saw it the same way. You don't want to hear from him. But he's absolutely right on the principle of what he's saying.
Yeah.
And the problem that he and James Harden have with each other is a general, I think, lack of respect for what each other has accomplished. Because largely, they've accomplished it without the other. James Harden became James Harden well before Chris Paul ever became in Houston. And Chris Paul, like you said, was that dude when James Harden was still in college.
Yep.
And when James Harden was coming off the bench in Oklahoma City, Chris Paul was leading teams. Now, he didn't lead them to the conference finals, but he led them. And then you have this clash where Chris Paul is no longer at the top of his game, but close enough to say, hey, I'm still that dude. James Harden is like, no, you're not. And this is where you have a meeting where I think it's sort of untenable now.
Well, also these superstar mergers that, you know, we're talking about and seeing in the league. So one thing I think doesn't get discussed enough in that is when Boston did it, it was guys that were kind of cool with each other
mm-hmm.
and they came together. When Miami did it, it was guys that were cool with each other and they came together. And now in Boston, it was different because those guys had games that perfectly complemented one mm-hmm. another. Like for Kevin Garnett, he was when the situation needed to be in his whole life, which is I get to lead the team, but I don't have to take shots that matter. Perfect, right? This works for you. Paul Pierce, I don't have to be a guy shutting down the best defensive, you know, playing defense to shut down that guy. And me, Ray Allen, yo, man, I just get buckets.
Right.
It worked perfectly. In Miami, Dwayne and LeBron had to figure out how to do it because they'd both been out front in that way. But there was also, I think, like a very clear understanding, this is Dwayne's city.
Right.
Right? And LeBron, but Dwayne is like, nah, LeBron, I got you. We're going to bring this along. And they were in a position where they could figure it out. This is putting two strangers together
mm-hmm.
in this situation. And so James Harden has been his team for 5 years. Chris Paul, who is Chris Paul, right? Love him, hate him, whatever it is. You knew who he was when you got him.
Mm-hmm.
He is Chris Paul. So how do you, like, putting that together, when these teams, everybody starts talking about, we going to get another superstar or whatever, we going to bring this thing together. If you used to this being yours, and now it's somebody else's?
That's a problem.
I don't know how you figure that out and to get it in the middle.
And not just that. Where's the foundation? Like when there comes a problem, because every team goes through problems over 6, 8, 9 months, the foundation of, hey, we're cool. Hey, we're friends. We can sit down and hash this out. You hear about Draymond Green and Kevin Durant having like wine after their little thing or whatever. Like they had a foundation. What do these two dudes do? Have they played on the Olympic team together? Okay, so what? Like, really hanging out with each other, really being with each other and really being able to get along. I think that's sort of a problem that they didn't have. And when you have a team that's put together by someone who looks at numbers and not people, yeah, you get people problems.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? So like, I think one thing I wanted to clarify, like, if these guys come together at once and they're sharing it, it's one thing. But when this is somebody else's house,
right,
and now you move somebody else into the house, that's what we had in Golden State,
mm-hmm,
right? And, you know, and look, there was Russell Westbrook also in Oklahoma City, yes, but Kevin Durant was very well taken care of in Oklahoma City.
Absolutely.
And now he comes in, they already got a way they do things, and you can't walk in and be like, yo, we're going to do things a new way. With LeBron, when he got to Miami, he did try to walk in and say, we're going to do things a new way. And Pat Riley came downstairs and was like, dog, I don't think you understand.
Nah, Chief.
This is my team. Right? You think it's your team. This is my team, right?
And who's going to say that to Chris Paul and James Harden?
Well, the only person who can say that really is the owner, and woo, he's something.
Yeah, and I think that's the bigger story that hasn't been written or has been sort of lightly talked about because he's so out front. He's in the restaurant business. You know what happens in the restaurant business? You don't like your chef, you fire your chef, right? He's used to being able to operate by fear in a lot of different ways that NBA owners cannot operate by fear. You don't run your team. James Harden runs your team. So even if you're upset with James Harden, you can't fire James Harden. You have to deal with it. James Harden wants to go to L.A. a few days early because he wants to hang out or do whatever. Guess what? You're going to L.A. 3 days early. You don't dictate anything but write the checks. It's like that scene in Players Club with Bernie Mac and Jamie Records. All you do is spin the records. Who you think you is? DJ Quick? Kid Capri? like literally, that's how James Harden looks at Fertitta. Like, look, man, you just write the checks. Write the checks.
Yeah, I tell you this, though. I don't recommend he never say that to that man.
No, I'm not saying that, but that's the attitude.
Yeah, I'm just telling you right now, I don't recommend he take that approach. Like, Fertitta not built for that. This is, like, I say he's a booster. Because, you know, he's the big University of Houston football booster. He's going to engage in some booster behavior. I've said this. Like, this is not a fully informed opinion. This is mostly, you know, my speculation. I don't think that Daryl Morey is going to be working that job this time next year unless they win a championship.
I don't disagree with you because I think there are some forces inside that building that Daryl Morey has not necessarily ingratiated himself with recently with actions.
Yeah.
And I say that purposely, cryptically. And I don't think that Daryl Morey, when you're talking about the people business, I think he'll be able to get a job.
Oh, no.
Like, cause he's good at it. But I think there, that time is running out cause he expects to win.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to hear anything about coaching staffs and Mike D'Antoni and all this other type of stuff. That dude wants to win. He wants to win immediately.
But I think it's two things. One, they could can him. Two.
True.
Morey's a bright guy. Morey been there how long? Like 12 years?
Yeah, he been in a minute.
I think he got there at 07.
He been in a minute.
Yeah, Morey just go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Ain't no shortage of places where Morey could find a job. I mean, now granted, this place is a disaster, but if I'm Morey, I would consider going upstairs right now and being like, hey, the Wizards got this job,
ooh,
and I think maybe, just maybe, I should go see what they talking about.
Ooh.
Why not? You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, looking at what this is looking like in Houston, I don't see a pathway to success here because winning ain't going to fix what the issue is.
Yeah, but there's no winning in D.C.
There is no winning right now.
I don't think there's winning, period.
Here's what I think. Because, I mean, like I always say, I'm 38 years old. They ain't won 50 games in my life. Literally. That's not an exaggeration. And you go down the list of players that the Wizards have had in those 38 years to not win 50 games.
They've had some ball players.
They've had some really good players. They've had really good players at the same time, and they have not won 50 games. Anyway, if you bring in Morey, I think you give him all the power in the world. Like, I think Leonsis would give Daryl all the power in the world. And one thing I do know that Daryl can do, Daryl can make your team competitive, and Daryl will get you a level of flexibility that will allow you to improve your roster. Like, he messes some stuff up in terms of how to put all these things together from year to year. But in terms of knowing what he's doing, like, I don't always agree with his approach.
Right.
But I do not deny that his approach has been largely effective.
Well, not just that, to your point. Remember, he had that flirtation with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And then Houston re-upped him. I don't think Fertitta's the type of guy that likes being sort of held over a barrel that way. Because he had just come in.
Yeah.
He didn't have the equity to say, you know what, you can walk. He had just paid $2.2 billion for that team. And this guy's like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and talk to Philadelphia. So yeah, you need to pay me. Like, I don't think he forgets those things.
No, I assure you he does not.
Like, he doesn't, he doesn't forget, hey, somebody else agreed to this deal with Chris Paul before I got here. Well, I gotta pay this dude $140 million. So if I'm Morey, absolutely, I'm seeing the writing on the wall. Someone told me a couple days ago, it'll be 2 years before Morey's out of there. Like, just the walls closing in, all that type of stuff. And if Morey sees it, I can see him getting out quicker.
And it's time, man. He's been there 12 years.
How long do you have to have it? How long do you, like, there's a shelf life to this.
Yeah, but also, if I'm him,
right.
I've been doing this for 12 years, yeah. Right? I've kind of gotten this probably to where it's going to go.
As good as it's going to be.
And I feel like these last couple of years, he had to do something that he'd never really been big on before. And pretty much every general manager gets to a point where they have to do this, which is, I got to stop worrying about being so flexible, and I got to try to win this right now. Right? Like, now is the time. And I think he's a guy who enjoys doing this with the flexibility. Like, we see what happened with Danny Ainge, right? Where Danny Ainge valued that flexibility to the point of it blowing up in his face. But there's some fun to be had if you like playing around with the pieces, you know, like, if that's what you enjoy doing, which seems pretty clearly to be something that Daryl Morey enjoys doing.
Well, who doesn't enjoy doing that when there's no pressure to actually produce anything?
Yeah, it's franchise mode on Madden.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what this is. After a while, you don't even play the games, baby. You just be Sim-o. Out of here in free agency.
Sim-o, baby.
You're like, how did, I ain't gonna lie, when you do that in Madden, and them jokers mess around and go 10-6, you'll be over there furious. Like, wait a minute. Look at what I gave you. You gave me 10-6.
You can't be 12-4.
Right. Are you serious? Like, all of a sudden, we all turn into the person that we swear
we wouldn't be.
That we despise. Yeah, we all do. But on the basketball end, though, what in the world are they going to do? By the way, do they have a coach?
They have a coach. I don't know if that coach is built for the roster that he has. Not the roster. The roster of people that he has.
Well, hold on. And if he's not built for it, we know what he will do.
He will be out. Here's the thing. No, he won't. He will make you fire him.
Or he'll quit.
Because he wants his money.
Oh, I know he wants his money. But, I mean, the Knicks, he just looked up and said, fine, I quit.
Yeah, but that's different, though. Coaching Carmelo Anthony and all the other type of stress that come with that. Ain't nothing like that.
You telling me that's going to be more stressful than dealing with what this look like it is? And you out here on a lame duck contract?
Yeah, because it ain't in New York.
I feel you. But lame duck contract.
Mm-hmm.
This particular owner. And I feel like Dolan's crazy is a bit more of a benign crazy than the crazy side that seems to be there with Fertitta.
Well, true. Can he afford to quit? And I mean, reputation wise, can he afford to quit another job?
I think that people are looking around at this one and understand.
You might be right.
I mean, like, I don't know, but I just know. But if Mike D'Antoni doesn't like it, didn't he quit in Phoenix?
Yes.
I'm just saying, like, if he don't want to do it, he's going to quit.
Can you quit a third job and get another one?
I mean, I couldn't.
That's true.
But that ain't got... See, there you go. Misunderstanding who we talk about here.
That is very true.
You know what I'm saying? There are different rules here. I got no reason to believe that he can't. And plus, who else you going to hire? Right? I'm not the biggest D'Antoni fan, but he's not bad at this.
No.
Right?
He can get you out of where you don't want to be to competitive.
Yes.
Can he get you to a championship type of status? I don't think so. And I think we think of D'Antoni as being like this coach who's had bad luck.
But he has.
True. While that's true, sometimes the bad luck kind of hits you and you don't really bounce back from it. Like, there's championship coaches who just don't become championship coaches for a reason.
Well, I think there's that, but I also think that we're talking about like Kyrie Irving, right? Can you win a championship if Kyrie Irving is your best player? We like Steve Nash a lot. Can you win a championship if Steve Nash is your best player?
I don't think so.
All right, and that's not Mike D'Antoni's fault.
Right.
And that I think becomes, could you win a championship if Amari Stoudemire was your best player? You know?
Well, at that point in the NBA, maybe you could have, because that was like at that sort of mid-ground between the superstars of this generation
growing and
maturing. So if there was a window, that would have been the window where the outlier could have happened.
I think that's fair. I mean, if we get like the 2006 Heat. In this stretch, you know what I mean?
The Antoine Walker.
Yes, Jason Williams, Gary Payton.
Oh, GP. I'm not going to say nothing about GP. GP is my guy.
But, oh, no, I like Gary Payton.
But he was GP on the back end.
As I recall, Gary Payton was drafted in 1990.
Yes.
That was 2006.
Have you ever talked to Gary Payton in 2019? He will talk to you like it's 1994.
Oh, I'm sure. Sure. It's probably like watching the Wu-Tang documentary. It's like, wow.
I haven't seen that, but everybody tells me I should.
They all still talk like it's 1994, which I love. Like, it is amazing. But let me ask you this. If the Rockets, what are they going to do? I mean, they can't trade Chris Paul. All these guys are coming back. Like, everybody has to, and it sounds to me like Chris Paul has looked around and been like, it's not so much Chris Paul being like, I can't take it anymore, as much as I'm telling you, this isn't going to work.
I think that's what it is in a matter of his own personal sanity, because he's used to structure and order and being able to have a certain amount of control over said order. He doesn't feel any of that. Like, even the points where he can exert a certain amount of influence throughout the course of the game, you have to have cooperation from a guy like James Harden. And he doesn't even have that. So these two guys are like engaging in petty sort of things against the other that border on like high school stuff. Like, this is the type of thing that you see college roommates going on a ride doing each other. Like, somebody taking a cable cord out of the TV. I bought the TV, you got the cable cord. Guess what? You can watch TV, but I don't know what you're watching. That's what it looks like with these two. It looks that petty. Oh, you want to watch Chappelle? Not tonight, brother. Go find somebody else's cable cord.
They putting the line down the middle.
Yes.
My side of your side.
Yes. This is not like Bert and Ernie, where one person's mad at the other. This is, I won't even say hostile, because passive aggressive. Like, James Harden is not the confrontational dude.
Right.
Mike D'Antoni, not the confrontational dude.
Chris Paul.
You know what Chris Paul is.
He's up in your grill.
He doesn't let nothing slide. So if you're non-confrontational and you're like swallowing your own grievances that you feel against the other,
yeah,
and somebody's coming out here telling you every little nitpicky thing that you do wrong, oh, I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah, Chris Paul gonna walk right up to you, then take his head, turn it up, look you in the eye. I need to stop. Six feet as well.
Did you say take his head and turn it up?
Let me stop. 6 foot is above the average height for the average American. Hell, Chris Paul taller than you. So I need
Wow, seriously?
He is.
Not by much.
Okay, I'm just saying. I don't
have to look up to Chris Paul.
I'm trying to apologize to you. I actually had this conversation with Gabe the other day. I didn't realize it. He's 5'8". I thought he was taller than that. Kind of the same with you. Y'all carry yourselves with a dignity that makes y'all seem taller than y'all are. And
actually, I'm not 5'8" by any stretch.
No, you're not 5'8". You're like 5'10 and a half, right?
Yes. Yes.
Aren't you proud of me for giving you the half?
I am very proud of that.
Yeah.
And aren't you ready to concede that the one time I've ever cussed you out...
You cussed me out so bad.
The one time I cussed Bomani out, are you willing to concede that I was right?
Okay, so we were talking about whether or not Chris Paul was better than Isaiah Thomas. And I haven't taken the time to go re-examine my arguments in this place. There's a great advanced statistic case to be made for Chris Paul. On the flip side, there is great qualitative data and evidence to go on Isaiah Thomas' side. And as I told you at the time, I didn't really have no counter for what it was that you were saying. And what I don't understand is why you just put your elbows up on the table and cross your arms with this level of satisfaction, because you're so happy y'all finally got a win. Y'all stay doing that to me, man. It's like UCLA and Notre Dame when somebody got one over on me.
Well, here's the thing. You're smart. And your conclusions are pretty well reasoned.
Yeah, no, you were strong on it. You were strong on it. And I just want you to understand that the kind of dude I am, I ain't never got no problem saying, no, man, you was right about that. I ain't got no issue. You ain't got to try to flex on me to get me to give you your credit. I give you your credit.
You know what this is? This is payback for Houston. This is payback for All-Star Weekend.
Okay, let me tell the people what I did to Vinny at the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
So we was at and by the way, I have to say, I may not have been the greatest friend the whole night at the Kenny Smith's All-Star Party in Houston in 2013.
George.
Yeah, so like we were waiting outside and then we saw Charles Barkley and them. That's Charles and Ernie. And we started talking to them. And well, I started talking to them. I had my homeboy with me. And this is like the first time I met Charles in person. And they was getting in the back door. And Charles was like, oh yeah, Bomani, he here with us. I was like, cool. And by the time I realized what had happened, I turned around. My homeboy wasn't there and the door shut. And so I just went up the steps.
With friends like you.
Yeah. With friends like me, he got into the party in the first place. Anyway, so while we there, they making like announcements over the microphone at the club. It kind of felt like school at the end of an assembly, you know? And they were like, Vincent Goodwill, we have your ID. Vincent Goodwill. And me thinking I'm a good friend, I'm trying to make sure that they know where my man is so that he can get his ID. And so I stop and stand and turn as loud as I can in front of everybody and I go, he's right here. He's right here. Vinny Goodwill right here. He's standing right here.
As I'm slowly trying to crawl my way to the front of the stage to get my ID. The benefit to being 5'10 and a half, you can sort of slither through the crowd without much of an issue.
I had a great night that night myself.
I bet you did.
My night was incredible.
I had a great night up until that point.
Man, that was a good night.
With friends like you.
With friends like you. That's right. I'll be coming through. I'll be coming through.
No, you come through in the clutch. That was a very Scottie Pippen sit down with 1.7 seconds left while Tony Kukoc takes the shot. That's what that was.
No. That would be more like Scottie Pippen going on the floor and telling everybody, hey, Kukoc gonna get the shot. Like, it'd be a little bit more like that. If we're going to be honest about this. So do we know what the Rockets are going to be? Because they could also win the West if they could just get it together.
I don't think they can win the West.
I think if they could get it together, they could win the West. I think anybody can win the West now.
Well, considering the problems that people are having in Southern California with numbers and management and timing and things like that, yeah, maybe so. Yeah, like, who else?
Say, who's going to win? Utah could win the West. They just got Mike Conley.
Utah could. I'm surprised they made that move, but Utah could win the West.
Yes.
I would have gone a different way. I would have made a move for Malcolm Brogdon out of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Because he would have come a little bit cheaper. You could have just overpaid more than what Milwaukee paid. But they went for it. Like, I got no problem with teams that go for it. You see Golden State down? You know what? This is our chance.
Yep.
If it's 1 year, 1 year and a half, whatever it is, we're going for it. They still don't know where Kevin Durant is going, right? We still have no clue what that man is going to do.
No.
So, if the Lakers are still fiddling what they got to fill out. The Clippers, we have no idea if they're getting Kawhi Leonard.
I don't know if anybody's going to get anybody that, to really speak of.
Can you imagine? We've had 18 months of buildup. 18 months of talking about the free agency bonanza. And nobody moves?
Because two injuries changed the game.
Good. Bo, let me tell you. That was literally the most bizarre two games I've ever attended or watched in my entire life. Period. Like, the game five was worse than game six. Like, game six, it was like, you know what? It's time for this series to be over. At that point, like, I was ready for game seven at the start of game six. I was like, you know what? Maybe they found something. There's no more Kevin Durant. At that point, you didn't know how bad it really, you know, how bad it was. Because there was still, like, this thought that maybe it wasn't an Achilles. Or that it was a full Achilles tear. There was still, like, a thought. Okay, maybe it might have been a strain. It's like, okay, you know what? Maybe they figured out, let's go to a game seven. Klay's going off in game six, right? And then you're like, okay, this is game six Klay. Maybe they get waxed in game seven, but all right, we can go back to Toronto. All right, cool. And then that happens. As soon as he hit the floor, I turned to someone and said, I'm ready to go home. Let's just call the series over. I don't care who wins.
Right, everybody can go home. No.
We don't have to do anything more. And the first time I got excited about that series, when Kevin Durant came out there and hit those three straight shots, I was like, oh, we're here now. We are here. Like, as much as I, you know, you like Stephen Curry and his game, watching KD and Kawhi, the possibility of those two dudes going at it, I was like, okay, the real stars are here now. Let's do this. And then he tries to go left to right. And I'm like,
it's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Sorry about that game. Like, yeah. And it was like a pall over like the entire series at that point.
All that guilt. Everybody felt guilty. Everybody that wondered if Kevin Durant was hurt felt guilty. And that was a whole lot of people. They was all feeling mad guilty.
But who didn't believe that he was real? My thing is, how could someone not believe that a ball player, a dude who gets into arguments with burner accounts over basketball, doesn't want to play basketball? And not only that, didn't want to play basketball against a guy like Kawhi Leonard, who people were saying was better than him?
But when you don't like somebody, it ain't got to make sense.
They just really don't like Kevin Durant.
I think that just across the board, the people who had those questions about him were people who did not like him. Like, I think, like, looking at Bob Myers, Bob looked like a man that was questioning himself in a way that I think went beyond the evaluation of an MRI. You know, like, I think there were people there that had questions. And like, and I wonder this also, if Looney doesn't come back, right? Because they said Looney was going to be out for the playoffs, mm-hmm. but Looney said, oh, well, I'm coming back. If he doesn't come back, I wonder if we look at Durant differently under this circumstance, you know, because I mean, I would never question that. Like, I'm reading Marcus's book right now about him. This dude don't want to do nothing but play basketball.
That's it. The man don't want to brush his hair.
Right.
He wants to play ball. Like, that is his life. He wants to play ball, talk about ball. Like, the best conversation I had with Kevin Durant, like, completely off the record one day, was about basketball and his experiences growing up in D.C. and being around Steve Francis in the DMV. Like, he just loves talking about ball. What player do you like? Who do you think is better between these two guys? That's his life. There is nothing else. There's no wife. There's no kids. It's ball. Like, his inner circle has changed. It's just ball. That's the constant. So for people to say that this guy didn't want to play, right, like, I felt like that was doing such a disservice to him.
And now he's never going to be the same. I've seen people try to rationalize, well, he'll still be a very good player. He will. He will still be a very good player. But a lot of his game is predicated on, you have to worry about what he can do off the dribble. You know? And because his game as a 7-foot perimeter player is not Dirk Nowitzki's game as a 7-foot perimeter player. Yeah, like, it's different. What makes it go is different. And so he's going to lose some level of explosion. I've seen people make the argument, well, we've seen Rudy Gay kind of hold it together. One, Rudy Gay can't play 30 minutes a night. The other thing about Rudy Gay is what Rudy Gay did was Rudy Gay became a better shooter to account for the lack of
Kevin Durant can't become a better shooter.
It's not possible. There's no place for him to improve in that direction. And so, like, where he goes, I have no idea what that's ultimately going to mean. The Warriors are going to re-up on Klay Thompson. They have to punt on a whole season. I can't think of a team that's ever just had to start off in the beginning and being like, yo, we got to punt on next year.
Not just that.
They moved into a new building.
Not just that. You might as well give Steph Curry and Steve Kerr a year off.
Yeah.
Like, Steph, go ahead and rest.
Well,
season management.
Here's what we might get, though, because they got to sell those tickets, right? Maybe people paying a lot of money to go to those games. Steph going to play. He also might score like 40 a night.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't think that's going to happen. I think Steph is going to big picture this whole thing. I got 3 rings. I maybe have a chance at maybe one more. I have to conserve my body this season. As much as they want to, you know, go all out, get the 8th seed, for who? For what?
He don't sign those checks. And if a franchise wants to say this guy is being lazy and putting himself before entertaining the fans, it will work on Steph Curry like it has worked on every other player that has ever been. Like, if he's down to do that, because I wouldn't blame him, but he got to be willing to take the heat that's going to come on the back end of that. He's going to have some people that support him and say, yeah, he's making the right call, but that's a dangerous play for somebody who wants to be beloved in the way that Steph does.
Yeah, that's true. And I'll say this. Maybe I'm in denial about Kevin Durant, because I'm one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can come back and be 95% of the player.
95% of the player that goes maybe from being the best player in the NBA
to a top 5.
I think it might be more like a top 10.
I can't picture a world where Kevin Durant is not as good
as he
is. I agree,
but I think the margins are so thin.
Yeah.
Like, he is immediately, like, no, and this is why I say it's definitely not top 5. He is immediately below Giannis, Kawhi. Who else did we anoint this postseason?
Giannis and Kawhi were the 2.
Those are the 2 big ones. I mean, he's probably below James Harden.
No.
It's probably below him.
No, maybe Embiid, but not James Harden.
Embiid's a tricky one. But yeah, so he's in that space. And what Jokic becomes, we will ultimately see. Though I don't know how Jokic can get better.
Yeah, I saw you getting the Twitter fight over
there. Yeah, no, I think he's great. But like, I still see room for him. Like, if you're talking about the future, I think Embiid's a better player now, though not by much. But I see great room for improvement for Embiid still. Now, whether he actually does it is a different discussion.
Yeah, if he gets a post game with a couple counters, he's good.
But I don't know what the ceiling on Jokic might be what it is right now. And let's be clear. That's no shade.
Yeah.
If it turns out to be that. But no, we mentioned earlier that about maybe nobody goes anywhere. So Jimmy Butler's going to stay in Philadelphia.
Maybe.
I think he stays.
Okay.
I think that Klay Thompson obviously is going to stay in Golden State. I have no idea what to do with Kevin Durant. Now, of course, Kyrie's going to go somewhere.
Yes.
And I guess Al Horford, it is now clear that he is going to go somewhere. I have no idea what's going to happen with, like, Tobias Harris.
Right.
Chris Middleton, I imagine, stays. Who else we got out here?
Those are basically the main, like Kemba Walker.
I don't care. Like, I think he's a good player. I don't think there's ever been a player as good as him that I cared less about.
Really?
Maybe it's because he played for the Hornets, and that's a real easy way to me never watch you play basketball.
Yeah.
But
he's really good.
He is really good, but unless he wound up with the Lakers, I don't know how he's going to make me care where he go.
He's the third guy. Like, at the best, he's what? Third guy on the championship team? And your 2 first guys got to be absolute studs?
Or at the very least, like, physically dominant type guys. right? Because he's not a big dude.
Yeah.
You know, size still matters in the NBA, regardless of what anybody thinks. Like the Warriors, for example, quiet as it's kept, pretty big team position to position.
Absolutely.
Let me think, who else we got out here? I guess Vucevic is going to stay in Orlando. He got to be like, how come nobody talk about me?
Because people don't know how to spell your name.
Fair. Even though it's really simple. It is very simple.
People are lazy.
That's fair. That's fair. I guess Porzingis is going to stay in Dallas, obviously.
Yeah, they're going
to
pay him.
What do you think about this? They talk about Al Horford might go to Dallas. And I'm like, is that no state income tax thing really that big a deal to you, Al Horford?
Like, why?
I don't get that at all.
That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, put it like this. Al Horford clearly has some type of deal in place, which brings in the tampering thing. Like, we should just start free agency on April 22nd.
Yes.
Let's just call it. This is, like, why are we waiting?
Right.
But here's the bigger play. Danny Ainge, bro, what is you doing?
Well, hold on. Let's say this for Horford, and it ties into Danny Ainge. It sounds like Horford is just like, no, you don't understand. I ain't going back there. I don't want to do this no more.
Not with him. Not with them.
Like, what if Al Horford is the Sam I am of this whole situation? He's like, I will not do it in a boat. I will not do it with a goat. I am out of here.
Green eggs and ham, brother.
I am gone, dog. I'm not doing this.
But here's the thing. Wherever he signs will be the indictment on the Celtics. Because if he signs 4 years, $100 million with like a team that's going nowhere, then that makes the Celtics look worse.
Yes.
If he goes somewhere like the Clippers, right? Okay, you put him with Harrell. You put him maybe with Kawhi or whoever else could be there. All right, cool. You can make a logical argument that makes more sense.
Right.
But if he sees Boston, he's like, you know what? This year was a mess. This coach ain't as good as we think he is because he can't necessarily relate to people, or we don't have the people to relate to people. And Danny Ainge has done too much leveraging through the years to make me believe that he won't put me on that Summer Jam screen if necessary.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
He's out. See, did you see where Jackie Mack was saying this on TV in Boston? Where she was like, she thinks the problem started with them trying too hard to get Gordon Hayward going.
You don't say.
But it's an interesting thing because you kind of have to because you're paying him $30 million a year.
Do you have to this year?
Well, let's think. You're paying him $30 million a year this year.
Yeah,
right?
But you're paying him $30 million for a bunch of years.
I agree. You're not incorrect in this. But I'm just saying, when somebody pays a dude $30 million a year, they ain't really trying to hear about next year when he ain't getting none out of them last year,
no,
right?
While I get that, you can't rob Peter to pay Paul and say, well, we're playing for the future and we're also playing for now.
Right.
You can't do both.
I agree with that, but here's the thing I'm going to go to, though, and tell me what you think about this. I think what also happened with Hayward, and this happened with the other teams that wanted to sign him, was a general overvaluing of how good he was in the first place. Now, I don't know how much this injury is affecting where he is right now. Like, we saw Paul George suffer a horrific injury and he was the same. It was a different injury.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not in a position to evaluate that. But Gordon Hayward was not like a top 12 player in the NBA. Like, Gordon Hayward's a guy who gets a max contract in free agency, but this is like, what is he, the third best player on a championship team?
Maybe.
Right? But when you pay him $30 million a year before anybody else gets paid, that's not the way that you're going to treat him. That's not the way you're going to look at him. And these other cats are looking around like, yo, we was just balling without this dude.
Not just that. And I think that was a bigger problem than the Kyrie stuff. I think Kyrie was like the easy target because he says the weird stuff and he's generally weird, right? But not only do you have Gordon Hayward there. Think about it. Gordon Hayward, people talked about him like he was Paul George. Remember that was discussed?
I had people telling me that Gordon Hayward was a better player than Paul George.
And those people are high. I never understood that. And I like Gordon Hayward as a player, but no. Like, he's not there in the fact that you got him being the golden child of Brad Stevens, the $30 million man who's getting paid all this money. When you got all these guys on rookie contracts, they're trying to get their money.
Yeah.
And you already got yours. And on top of that, you won't even take a step back. So for the greater good of everybody else, or not even him, because I highly doubt he's the type of personality that wanted that focus on him. It was on everybody else that made that situation as bad as it was.
Right.
And that's on Brad. Remember the conversation? I forgot who the sports writer was who said, would you rather have any NBA player or Brad Stevens? Remember how absurd that conversation was?
Yes.
How silly does that look now?
And I still think Brad's a good coach. And I remember when, the Isaiah Thomas run, you can check that Jackie McMullen feature on that. Those guys thought he related to them fantastically. But what happened with Kyrie and all this stuff. This is the first time he's had to coach actual real live NBA stars or guys who legitimately believe they were going to be NBA stars. So like with Isaiah Thomas, he's the kind of guy that a coach will love, right? Because the way he does it, Brad Stevens is like, yeah, we can get behind this one.
Right.
But what this team also didn't have was a clear, and this is where I cut Stevens some slack. They didn't have a clear guy that the team listened to that was on the roster. Right, like that leadership's gonna have to come from the roster. So when you have Isaiah Thomas, he can be that guy. They didn't have that guy, and Brad Stevens is like, yo, dog, I used to coach at Butler. I don't know what you want from me.
Well, here's the thing. This is where I put it on Danny, or I put it on Brad. You need to have somebody on your staff that can cover up your blind spots.
I'd agree.
And I don't think they didn't realize they had those blind spots because they were, you know, basically engaging in, like, look how good we are when there's no expectations.
Right.
And I wonder if Brad is one of those type of coaches. Look how good I can be when I have a bunch of players who people don't expect anything from. I can get them to play over their head as opposed to having guys play up to their talent.
That's a good point. I think there's something to that. And then Danny just...
He overplayed his hand. Totally overplayed his hand. He didn't make one move. You got Terry Rozier, you had Jaylen Brown, you got Jason Tatum, you had plus many, many, many draft picks, right? What did he do?
By the way, and Marcus Smart's contract, which is really movable.
And he did nothing. Because he wanted to get the foolproof superstar. When you trade for Paul George, you trade for Paul George knowing he may go to the Lakers. If you trade for Kawhi Leonard, you trade for Kawhi Leonard knowing this may be a one-year rental. Like, there is no perfect situation. There is no Kevin Garnett who's just begging to get out of Minnesota in year 12 and is going to do whatever you say because he wants a chance to win. That guy doesn't exist in the league anymore.
Well, he was willing to do it with 2 years to convince Kyrie. He wasn't willing to do it with 1 year to convince these other guys. Now, I don't blame him for not getting Anthony Davis because the landscape changed by the time it came around, and he legitimately couldn't do it before,
right,
because of the contracts. Kawhi Leonard was the one where I was like, no, we're going to convince this dude to stay here. Or if we don't, fine. We had a year of Kawhi Leonard, and I got these parts that I'm going to have to get rid of anyway. Like, Terry Rozier not going to be playing for them next year, is he?
No.
Okay, so.
Did you not see he just talked his way out of town?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, right? But they still got, you know, they can still keep him if they want. Eric Gordon tried to talk his way out of town and that restricted free agency to keep you, right? But they're not going to have him. That was a part that needed to be moved in the offseason. And his value was never going to be higher than it was right then. I still am not sure what Jaylen Brown is going to be. I think he's good, but I don't know what he's going to be. I don't know. Is Jason Tatum going to be better when Kyrie goes away? Because he seemed to be better when Kyrie wasn't there.
Well, for Jaylen Brown, I have an easier bead on him. I think he's like an Iguodala type.
Yeah, except I feel like his offensive ceiling is higher than Iguodala's.
Yeah, he's not the passer, but he's probably more offensively inclined. But just saying as far as like a talent who can fit in a bunch of different places, I think that's that. The problem is this guy's the third pick in the draft, and he's never been really allowed to just go.
Yes.
And he's probably yearning for that.
And we saw in those playoffs, man, he gets you 30.
Yes.
And that's at 21.
Yes. And he thinks very highly of himself. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, because if I'm the third pick in the draft at 19 years old, you couldn't tell me nothing either.
Right.
And then on top of that, then you bring in a guy who plays the same position, by and large, in Tatum. And I don't think those two have any issues.
Well, they'd be fine playing with each other if you didn't have Gordon Hayward.
Absolutely. And Gordon Hayward making $30 million.
Right. That means he has to start.
Yes.
And this is where I looked at Danny Ainge and I was like, yo, you can't just... Like, this ain't no attic. This ain't no shed. You can't just store these things here. Like this is a roster. And you tried to start Kyrie, Tatum, Brown, and Hayward with Al Horford?
Bruh, you are asking for trouble. Like, who's the guy that's going to say, I'll willingly take a step back in this structure for the good of everybody else besides Al Horford?
Right. And you know why Al Horford might do that? Because you ask guys his age to do that.
Right.
You don't ask a 20-year-old to step back. If you have a 20-year-old and to make things better for the team, he needs to step back, then that is actually a guy that you need to give more.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? You should never be asking those guys. And that's like where I look back on the Kobe Bryant Shaq thing. And I'm like, okay, I get much better now as an adult where Kobe was coming from. You don't ask 23-year-old Kobe Bryant to step back.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah, yeah. It
makes you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Everyone's like, yo, you got to sacrifice it for the team. Sorta. Right? Like, you kind of want to do that, but that's a period in your life and in your career that you are supposed to be growing. You are supposed to be expanding.
You're supposed to be getting it.
Right.
And here's the other part of it. These guys know are well aware of how restricted free agency goes, and they know that the numbers will be used against them in July when they can't do anything about it until the next season. So you ask me to sacrifice, that's not going to help me get paid.
Right.
You're going to get somebody else. You paid somebody else willingly without a gun to your head.
Right.
And you're going to give them every chance to succeed, and you're going to do it on my back and in my pockets? Nah, Chief. Nah. Hey. Nah, Danny. That ain't happening.
Let's flip it up before we get done with this. The Anthony Davis trade. I think it's a trade you have to make if you're the Lakers.
Yes.
I think you try not to give up all you gave up, but I think you still do it if you absolutely had to. I just didn't think they had to.
But, dog, you check what the cap situation is before you do this, right?
Do you have that? Like, no, seriously. Like, do you have that? What have we called the Lakers? The mom and pop shop.
Yes.
When Jerry Buss was running things, did they have to have a cap guy? Or was it just like, oh, okay. Our salary cap is this amount. There are exceptions and cap holds and all this other type of stuff. This is a different world than the old school Lakers have had to deal with.
You know what this sounds like? I don't know if you ever had this happen to you. I don't know if it still happens in like this day and age, but back when I was a little broker, right? Okay. You get that debit card to somebody like on a Saturday and they run it and you just like, fingers crossed, and it goes through and you're like, yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go check your balance on Monday and you're like, why am I negative $75? Because over the weekend it still let you make the charges, but that didn't mean you actually had the money. Right? That's what I feel like. The Lakers game was like, yo, wait a minute. Like, no way.
No, this is worse than that. This is, I can tell you, as a broke college student. So you don't understand that charges don't show up often.
Yes.
when they're supposed to show up. So the charge goes through and you check your account. All right, I have $116 to play with this weekend. Except you forgot about the $40 you just spent that did not show up.
Yes.
So then you look on Monday and it's like, wait a minute, these charges aren't in order. I demand to talk to a manager. Sir, did you spend all this money? Yes. But it's in the wrong order. Sir, did you spend all this money? Yes. Case closed.
Yep.
That's the Lakers.
It's a wrap. Like, that's where they are. Like, and I made some calls. And one of the things that came up, David Griffin was just waiting on them to ask about the date. And they never did.
Oh, my God.
Waiting for the question. And it never came.
Who's going to do that? Is Rob going to do that?
Well, eventually at some point he did, because he looked up and was like, hey, so I was just wondering, you think we can push this back to the 30th? And Griffin's like, nah.
Nah, Chief. We already agreed to this in principle. Rob, let me tell you how this goes, since you're not used to being on this side.
Right.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine how bad?
We shook on it. That's it. We shook on it.
We shook on it over the phone. like there was no actual handshake. We just shook. We agreed in principle, and we put it out there. Can we renegotiate?
But Rob can't be like either. If the Lakers weren't so poorly run, they should be able to say, fine, then no deal. The Pelicans are going to get a deal as good as this, right? Like, Rob should have been able to leverage this. Nobody's going to give them a deal this good.
But they were so outwardly
desperate. They can't. Because they're the Lakers. This is who you are now.
This is who you've always been. You've never had to deal with a complicated NBA. We want Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. All right, Milwaukee. Cool.
Get him.
We want Shaq. All right, we at the Olympic Games. We're throwing money at him. We got Jerry West. Cool. We want Kobe Bryant. Charlotte, hand him over. Cool. Like, this is a different world than they're used to dealing with. And who's going to be the person to tell them? Who's the person besides Rob Pelinka, who's an agent by trade? Not the details guy, the big picture guy. He's the guy that says, give Kobe Bryant a maximum contract. I don't care what date you do it. Just give it to him.
Right.
That ain't his thing. Who's the detail guy that Rob Pelinka worked, that had Rob Pelinka working for him?
It's a good point.
There isn't one.
It's a good point.
Smallest front office in the league, right? One of the smallest front offices in the league.
And that's preposterous to me.
Because you're the Lakers. You're supposed to have all this. Where's the buses? Where's the Rambuses? Ain't they supposed to have all the details?
What are they good at?
Being the Rambuses. Being in Genie Buss's ear. That's right, Genie. You the champ.
Second
Boudini Brown, baby. You the champ. Second generation NBA ownership,
I've been telling people this, but leave the levels that people don't be peeping enough game on. Second generation.
Think about it. think about the second generation NBA ownership.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, we talked about this.
Chicago.
That second? Jerry's not in charge?
He's sort of taking more of a step back, and Michael's doing it.
Got it.
Chicago.
Yep.
New York.
Yep.
The Lakers.
Yep.
Big markets, flagship franchises that the league, it would behoove the league to be successful. They are not right now. Why are they not? For various reasons, but the common denominator is second generation ownership.
Yeah.
And Genie was supposed to be the savior on the white horse, remember?
That's right.
When Jim Buss was running into the ground, they like, Genie's going to come and save us. When Genie takes over, everything's going to be all right. Everything all right yet?
I tell you this, I'll let some people tell it. Jim wanted to give Kobe an $8 million deal instead of a $25 million deal. And I contend that all the problems started with the Lakers when they decided to pay Kobe all that money. Now, some have made the argument that that was just covert tanking.
That could have been.
And there's something to that. But it ain't been good since.
And here's the thing. You were gifted LeBron.
Yeah, he showed up.
At your door. All you had to do was just clear out the clutter.
It's like when O.J. Mayo went to USC.
Oh.
Right? There wasn't no recruiting. I'm coming. All right.
Cool. Like R.J. Barrett being at Duke and Zion coming. Right. Oh, he here?
Yeah.
All right. I guess I'll scoot over.
Yeah. Like, okay, I just wanted to let y'all know I'm showing up. Like, hey, I ain't need no letter. I ain't need no offer. I brought my own letter of intent. All right.
Tell me no.
That's what LeBron said.
Tell me no. I dare you.
By the way, I don't know how they're going to fill out the rest of their roster, but a halfway competent general manager with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, we're winning the West.
Well, here's the thing. Do you need a third superstar?
No. They need more players, but they don't need a superstar. The problem, I think, though, is the caliber of player they need, can they get those guys without paying superstar prices? Like, they would need somebody willing to take a discount, and that's not today's NBA.
No. Here's the thing. Not only the caliber of player they need can they get, can they identify the caliber of player that they need? Can they identify the needs of the roster and say, okay, Kuzma is this type of player. LeBron is going to be this type of player for this many games because we have to conserve his body. Anthony Davis is this type of player for this long because we know him. Like, do they have the identification there?
You know who would be a pretty good player for them to have?
Who is that?
Al Horford.
That would be. But Al Horford don't like, A, he don't like playing the five.
Well, doesn't have to play the five.
Anthony Davis don't like playing the five either. Well,
Anthony Davis, whether he likes it or not, is a five in this NBA.
I agree with you, but somebody better tell him that.
I understand that, but Al Horford doesn't like playing the five. And you know what he's done? He's played the five for 12 years.
They've told him that he wasn't. And he tells himself that Kevin Garnett tells people he's not 7'2" or something
got
like
it.
That. That
got
type
it.
Of thing.
Got
like
it.
Jedi mind trick type of thing.
Yeah, we got two fours. You a four and a half.
That's it.
You're like a supersized four.
Y'all just interchangeable. Sometimes you're better defending the other team's five because you'll be a little bit longer. But you're not really the five. Can you imagine the coaching job? Oh, we ain't even got to that. We got the Deacon as an assistant. We got Jay Kidd as the assistant.
Oh, that's right.
And we got Frankie as the head coach.
Oh, that's right. Lionel Hollins is now in a, I say it is, let LeBron flex on Lionel Hollins.
The Deacon is not going to play any, he's not taking anybody guff.
Yeah, I'm going to say this. Hey, the Deacon going to be like, hey, this bus going to leave on time with that boy or without him. I got somewhere to be once we get to town.
You think the Deacon, when y'all get to, let's say, Memphis, or someplace, or New York. The Deacon seemed like he wants a good steak.
Yeah.
I ain't got time to be waiting on this whippersnapper.
Deacon gonna put that crooked finger in LeBron's face. I'm gonna tell you this one more time. Who you got, the Deacon or Paul Silas?
Ooh!
Except Paul Silas is a much bigger dude.
Yeah, Paul Silas is a bigger dude, but the Deacon just seemed like his back is strong.
Yeah.
Look, man, you straighten up.
But did, and again, the greatest Paul Silas story of all the Paul Silas stories, even better than Tyrus Thomas one. It's him chasing Ira Neubel out of the locker room in Atlanta, pointing his finger saying, and I quote, come back here, you hip-hop I'm not through with you.
I got a
and
better
Ira
one than
Neubel
with that.
Run it away. You got a better one?
Do you remember the Eric Snow story?
No.
So this is a game in Detroit. He was coaching the Cavs. Eric Snow did something that pissed Paul off. Paul sent him off the bench into the locker room. Eric Snow was like, I ain't going to no locker room. Paul got up and basically stood over him as if to say, if you don't, I'm going to embarrass you in front of 22,000 people. Now, at least the Iron Noble stuff happened with maybe a couple dozen people. You can get punked in front of a few dozen people, right? It becomes urban legend. But when you get punked on a Sunday afternoon... So then after the game, the press is asking him, like, Eric Snow went to Michigan State, so PV got some ties and all this other type of stuff. And asking Paul, like, Paul, what happened with Eric Snow? Not talking about it. People keep pressing him. He's like, I told you, I want to talk about no Eric Snow. That was the end of that. Nobody asked Paul Sides about Eric Snow ever again.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Man, Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Appreciate you, sir. Vinny Goodwill, Yahoo Sports. Thank you, man.
My man.
Hope your Twitter calmed down.
It better.
They wild it. They wild it. Now, got a couple things to let you guys know. I am going to be on vacation next Tuesday. So Gabe is going to post all of the Baseline Supermax series together in one episode. So you'll have that. But there's no show on Tuesday. Anthony Jeselnik will be our guest next Thursday. I don't have to be the biggest jerk on my own show sometime, right? That's going to be great. Also, the first installment of the Right Time Book Club, the guest will be Howard Bryant. We're going to do that on Tuesday, July 2nd. So read the first 100 pages, send your thoughts and questions to Gabe with the hashtag The Right Time Book Club on Twitter. Also, check out the Woj podcast coming to ESPN July 1st, just in time for free agency. You don't want to miss that. All right, subscribe to The Right Time. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are hater, and I'll talk to you in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.